Chapter 5. Pippi sits on the gate and climbs a tree. Outside Villa Villacoola sat Pippi, Tommy, and Anika. Pippi sat on one gatepost, Anika on the other, and Tommy sat on the gate. It was a warm and beautiful day toward the end of August. A pear tree that grew close to the fence stretched its branches so low that the children could sit and pick the best little red-gold pears without any trouble at all. They munched and ate and spit pear cores out onto the road. Villa Villacoola stood just at the edge of the little town, where the street turned into a country road. The people in the little town loved to go walking out Villa Villacoola way, for the country out there was so beautiful. As the children were sitting there eating pears, a girl came walking along the road from town. When she saw the children, she stopped and asked, "Have you seen my papa go by?" Said Pippi. "How did he look? Did he have blue eyes?" "Yes," said the girl. "Medium large, not too tall and not too short?" "Yes," said the girl. "Black hat and black shoes?" "Yes, exactly," said the girl eagerly. "No, that one we haven't seen," said Pippi decidedly. The girl looked crestfallen and went off without a word.
"Wait a minute,"
shrieked Pippi after her.
"Was he bald-headed?"
"No, he certainly was not," said the girl crossly.
"Lucky for him," said Pippi, and spit out a pear core.
The girl hurried away, but then Pippi shouted,
"Did he have big ears that reached way down to his shoulders?"
"No," said the girl, and turned and came running back in amazement. "You don't mean to say that you've seen a man walk by with such big ears?"
"I have never seen anyone who walks with his ears," said Pippi. "All the people I know walk with their feet."
"Oh, don't be silly.
I mean, have you really seen a man who has such big ears?"
"No," said Pippi. "There isn't anybody with such big ears. It would be ridiculous. How would they look? It isn't possible to have such big ears. At least not in this country," she added after a thoughtful pause.
"Of course, in China it's a little different. I once saw a Chinese in Shanghai. His ears were so big that he could use them for a cape. When it rained, he just crawled in under his ears and was as warm and snug as you please. Of course, his ears didn't have it so good. If it was very bad weather, he used to invite his friends to camp under his ears. There they sat and sang sad songs while the rain poured down. They liked him a lot because of his ears. His name was Hai Shang. You should have seen Hai Shang run to work in the morning. He always came dashing in at the last minute because he loved to sleep late. And you can't imagine how funny he looked, rushing in with his ears flying behind him like two big golden sails."
The girl had stopped and stood open-mouthed listening to Pippi. And Tommy and Anika forgot to eat any more pears. They were so utterly absorbed in the story.
"He had more children than he could count. And the littlest one was named Peter," said Pippi.
"Oh, but a Chinese baby can't be called Peter," interrupted Tommy.
"That's just what his wife said to him. A Chinese baby can't be called Peter. But Hai Shang was dreadfully stubborn, and he said the baby should be called Peter or nothing. And then he sat down in a corner and pulled his ears over his head and howled. And his poor wife had to give in, of course, and the kid was called Peter."
"Really?"
said Anika. "It was the hatefulest kid in all Shanghai," continued Pippi, "fussy about his food, so that his mother was most unhappy. You know, of course, that they eat swallows' nests in China. And there sat his mother, with a whole plateful of swallows' nests, trying to feed him. 'Now, little Peter,' she said, 'come, we'll eat a swallow's nest for Daddy.' But Peter just shut his mouth tight and shook his head. At last, Hai Shang was so angry that he said that no new food should be prepared for Peter until he had eaten a swallow's nest for Daddy. And when Hai Shang said something, that was that. The same swallow's nest rode in and out of the kitchen from May until October. On the 14th of July, his mother begged to be allowed to give Peter a couple of meatballs, but Hai Shang said no."
"Nonsense," said the girl in the road.
"Yes, that's just what Hai Shang said," continued Pippi.
"Nonsense," he said.
It's perfectly plain that the child can eat the swallow's nest if he'll only stop being so stubborn. But Peter kept his mouth shut tight from May to October. But how could he live? Asked Tommy, astonished. He couldn't live, said Pippi. He died of plain, common, ordinary pig-headedness, the 18th of October, and he was buried the 19th. And on the 20th, a swallow flew in through the window and laid an egg in the nest, which was standing on the table. So it came in handy after all. No harm done, said Pippi happily. Then she looked thoughtfully at the bewildered girl who still stood in the road. Why do you look so funny? Asked Pippi. What's the matter? You don't really think that I'm sitting here telling lies, do you? What? Just tell me if you do, said Pippi threateningly and rolled up her sleeves. Oh, no, indeed, said the girl, terrified. I don't really mean that you are lying, but... No, said Pippi, but it's just what I'm doing. I'm lying so my tongue is turning black. Do you really think that a child can live without food from May to October? To be sure, I know they can get along without food for 3 or 4 months, all right, but from May to October, it's just foolish to think that. You must know that's a lie. You mustn't let people fool you like that. Then the girl left without turning around again. People will believe anything, said Pippi to Tommy and Anika, from May until October. That's ridiculous. Then she called after the girl. No, we haven't seen your papa. We haven't seen a single bald-headed person all day. But yesterday, 17 of them went by, arm in arm. Pippi's garden was really lovely. You couldn't say it was well kept, but there were wonderful grass plots that were never cut, and the old rose bushes that were full of white and yellow and pink roses, perhaps not such fine roses, but oh, how sweet they smelled. A good many fruit trees grew there, too, and best of all, several ancient oaks and elms that were excellent for climbing. The trees in Tommy's and Anika's garden were not very good for climbing, and besides, their mother was always so afraid they would fall and get hurt that they had never climbed much. But now, Pippi said, suppose we climb up in the big oak tree. Tommy jumped down from the gate at once, delighted with the suggestion. Anika was a little hesitant, but when she saw that the trunk had nubbly places to climb on, she too thought it would be fun to try. A few feet above the ground, the oak divided into two branches, and right there was a place just like a little room. Before long, all three children were sitting there. Over their heads, the oak spread out its crown like a great green roof. We could drink coffee here, said Pippi. I'll skip in and make a little. Tommy and Anika clapped their hands and shouted, Bravo! In a little while, Pippi had the coffee ready. She had made buns the day before. She came and stood under the oak and began to toss up coffee cups. Tommy and Anika caught them. Only sometimes it was the oak that caught them, and so two cups were broken. Pippi ran in to get new ones. Next, it was the buns' turn, and for a while the air was full of flying buns. At least they didn't break. At last, Pippi climbed up with the coffee pot in one hand. She had the cream in a little bottle in her pocket and sugar in a little box. Tommy and Anika thought coffee had never tasted so good before. They were not allowed to drink it every day, only when they were at a party. And now they were at a party. Anika spilled a little coffee in her lap. First it was warm and wet, and then it was cold and wet, but that didn't matter to her. When they had finished, Pippi threw the cups down on the grass. I want to see how strong the china they make these days is, she said. Strangely enough, one cup and three saucers held together, and only the spout of the coffee pot broke off. Presently, Pippi decided to climb a little higher. Can you beat this? She cried suddenly. The tree is hollow. There in the trunk was a big hole, which the leaves had hidden from the children's sight. Oh, may I climb up and look too? Called Tommy. But there was no answer. Pippi, where are you? He cried, worried. Then they heard Pippi's voice, not from above, but from way down below. It sounded as if it came from under the ground.
I'm inside the tree. It's hollow clear down to the ground. If I peek out through a little crack, I can see the coffee pot outside on the grass.
Oh, how will you get up again? Cried Anika.
I'm never coming up, said Pippi. I'm going to stay here until I retire and get a pension. And you'll have to throw my food down through that hole up there 5 or 6 times a day.
Anika began to cry.
Why be sorry? Why complain?
Said Pippi.
You come down here too, and then we can play that we're pining away in a dungeon.
Never in this world, said Anika, and to be on the safe side, she climbed right down out of the tree.
Anika, I can see you through the crack,
cried Pippi.
Don't step on the coffee pot. It's an old, well-mannered coffee pot that never did anyone any harm. It can't help that it doesn't have a spout any longer.
Anika went up to the tree trunk, and through a little crack she saw the very tip of Pippi's finger. This comforted her a good deal, but she was still worried.
Pippi, can't you really get up? She asked.
Pippi's finger disappeared, and in less than a minute, her face popped out of the hole up in the tree.
Maybe I can if I try very hard, she said, and parted the foliage with her hands.
If it's as easy as all that to get up, said Tommy, who was still up in the tree, then I want to come down and pine away a little, too.
Wait, said Pippi. I think we'll get a ladder.
She crawled out of the hole and hurried down the tree. Then she ran after a ladder, pushed it up the tree, and let it down into the hole. Tommy was wild to go down. It was difficult to climb to the hole because it was so high up, but Tommy was brave, and he wasn't afraid to climb down into the dark hollow in the trunk. Anika watched him disappear and wondered if she would ever see him again. She peeked in through the crack.
Anika?
Came Tommy's voice.
You can't imagine how wonderful it is here. You must come in, too. It isn't the least bit dangerous when you have a ladder to climb on. If you only do it once, you'll never want to do anything else.
Are you sure? Asked Anika.
Absolutely, said Tommy.
With trembling legs, Anika climbed up in the tree again, and Pippi helped her with the last hard bit. She drew back a little when she saw how dark it was in the tree trunk. But Pippi held her hand and kept encouraging her.
Don't be scared, Anika,
she heard Tommy say from down below.
Now I can see your legs, and I'll certainly catch you if you fall.
But Anika didn't fall. She reached Tommy safely, and a moment later Pippi followed. Isn't it grand here? Said Tommy. And Anika had to admit that it was. It wasn't nearly so dark as she had thought, because light came in through the crack. She peeked through and announced that she too could see the coffee pot outside on the grass. We'll have this for our secret hiding place, said Tommy. Nobody will know that we are here. And if they should come and hunt around outside for us, we can see them through the crack, and we'll have a good laugh. We can have a little stick and poke it out through the crack and tickle them, and then they'll think the place is haunted, said Pippi. At this idea, the children were so delighted that they hugged each other, all three. Then they heard the ding-dong. That meant the bell was ringing for dinner at Tommy's and Anika's house.
Oh, bother, said Tommy. Now we've got to go home.
But we'll come over tomorrow as soon as we get back from school.
Do that, said Pippi.
And so they climbed up the ladder, first Pippi, then Anika, and Tommy last. And then they climbed down out of the tree, first Pippi, then Anika, and Tommy last.
Chapter 6. Pippi Arranges a Picnic. We don't have any school today because we're having scrubbing vacation, said Tommy to Pippi.
Scrubbing vacation? Well, I like that, said Pippi. Another injustice. Do I get any scrubbing vacation?
Indeed, I don't. Though goodness knows I need one. Just look at that kitchen floor. But for that matter, she added, now I come to think of it, I can scrub without any vacation. And that's what I intend to do right now.
Scrubbing vacation or no scrubbing vacation, I'd like to see anybody stop me. You two sit on the kitchen table out of the way. Tommy and Anika obediently climbed up on the kitchen table, and Mr. Nilsson hopped up after them and went to sleep in Anika's lap. Pippi heated a big kettle of water, and without more ado poured it out on the kitchen floor. She took off her big shoes and laid them neatly on the bread plate. She tied two scrubbing brushes on her bare feet and skated over the floor, plowing through the water so that it splashed all around her. "I certainly should have been a skating princess," she said, and kicked her left foot up so high that the scrubbing brush broke a piece out of the overhead light. "Grace and charm I have, at least," she continued, and skipped nimbly over a chair standing in her way. "Well, now, I guess it's clean," she said at last, and took off the brushes. "Aren't you going to dry the floor?" asked Anika. "Oh, no, it can dry in the sun," answered Pippi. "I don't think it will catch cold so long as it keeps moving." Tommy and Anika climbed down from the table and stepped across the floor very carefully so they wouldn't get wet. Out of doors, the sun shone in a clear blue sky. It was one of those radiant September days that make you feel like walking in the woods. Pippi had an idea. "Let's take Mr. Nilsson and go on a little picnic." "Oh, yes, let's," cried Tommy and Anika. "Run home and ask your mother, then," said Pippi, "and I'll be getting the picnic basket ready." Tommy and Anika thought that was a good suggestion. They rushed home and were back again almost immediately, but Pippi was already waiting by the gate with Mr. Nilsson on her shoulder, a walking stick in one hand and a big basket in the other. The children walked along the road a little way and then turned into a pasture where a pleasant path wound in and out among the thickets of birch and hazel. Presently they came to a gate on the other side of which was an even more beautiful pasture. But right in front of the gate stood a cow, who looked as if nothing would persuade her to move. Anika yelled at her, and Tommy bravely went up and tried to push her away, but she just stood there staring at the children with her big cow eyes. To put an end to the matter, Pippi set down her basket and lifted the cow out of the way. The cow, looking very silly, lumbered off into the hazel bushes. "Can you imagine that cows can be so bullheaded?" said Pippi, and jumped over the gate. "What a lovely, lovely wood!" cried Anika in delight, and climbed up on all the stones she could see. Tommy had brought along a dagger Pippi had given him, and with it he cut walking sticks for Anika and for himself. He cut his thumb a little, too, but that didn't matter. "Maybe we ought to pick some mushrooms," said Pippi, and she broke off a pretty rosy one. "I wonder if it's possible to eat it," she continued. "At any rate, it isn't possible to drink it, that much I know, so there is no choice except to eat it. Maybe it's possible." She took a big bite and swallowed it. "It was possible," she announced, delighted. "Yes, sirree. We'll certainly stew the rest of this sometime," she said, and threw it high over the treetops. "What have you got in your basket?" asked Anika. "Is it something good?"
"I wouldn't tell you for $1,000," said Pippi. "First we must find a good picnic spot."
The children began eagerly to look for such a place. Anika found a large flat stone that she thought was satisfactory, but it was covered with red ants, and "I don't want to sit with them," said Pippi, "because I'm not acquainted with them. And besides, they bite," said Tommy.
"Do they?" said Pippi. "Bite back, then."
Then Tommy found a little clearing among the hazel bushes, and he thought that would be a good place.
"Oh, no, that's not sunny enough for my freckles," said Pippi, "and I do think freckles are so attractive."
Farther on, they came to a hill that was easy to climb. On one side of the hill was a nice sunny rock, just like a little balcony, and there they sat down.
"Now, shut your eyes while I set the table," said Pippi.
Tommy and Anika squeezed their eyes as tightly shut as possible. They heard Pippi opening the basket and rattling paper.
1, 2, 19. Now you may look," said Pippi at last.
They looked, and they squealed with delight when they saw all the good things Pippi had spread on the bare rock. There were good sandwiches with meatballs and ham, a whole pile of sugared pancakes, several little brown sausages, and 3 pineapple puddings. For you see, Pippi had learned cooking from the cook on her father's ship.
"Aren't scrubbing vacations grand?" said Tommy with his mouth full of pancakes. We ought to have them every day.
No, indeed. I'm not so crazy as all that to scrub, said Pippi. It's fun, to be sure, but not every day. That would be too tiresome. At last the children were so full they could hardly move, and they sat still in the sunshine and just enjoyed it.
I wonder if it is hard to fly, said Pippi, and looked dreamily over the edge of the rock. The rock sloped down very steeply below them, and it was a long way to the ground.
Down, at least one ought to be able to learn to fly, she continued. It must be harder to fly up, but you could begin with the easiest way.
I do think I'll try.
No, Pippi, cried both Tommy and Anika. Oh, dear, Pippi, don't do that.
But Pippi was already standing at the edge.
Fly, you foolish fly, fly, and the foolish fly flew, she said.
And just as she said flew, she lifted her arms and took off into the air. In half a second, there was a thud. It was Pippi hitting the ground. Tommy and Anika lay on their stomachs and looked down at her, terrified.
Pippi got up and brushed off her knees.
I forgot to flap, she said joyfully, and I guess I had too many pancakes in my stomach.
At that moment, the children noticed that Mr. Nilsson had disappeared. He had evidently gone off on a little expedition of his own. They remembered that they had last seen him contentedly chewing the picnic basket to pieces, but during Pippi's flying experiment, they had forgotten him, and now he was gone. Pippi was so angry that she threw her shoe into a big, deep pool of water. You should never take monkeys with you anywhere, she said. He should have been left at home to pick fleas off the horse. That would have served him right, she continued, wading out into the pool to get her shoe. The water reached up to her waist.
I might as well take advantage of this and wash my hair, said Pippi, and ducked her head under the water and kept it there so long that the water began to bubble.
There now. I've saved a visit to the hairdresser, she said contentedly, when at last she came up for air.
She stepped out of the pool and put on her shoe. Then they went off to hunt for Mr. Nilsson.
Hear how it squishes when I walk, laughed Pippi.
It says, cluffs, cluffs, in my dress, and squish, squish, in my shoes.
Isn't that jolly? I think you ought to try it, too, she said to Anika, who was walking along beside her with her lovely flaxen hair, pink dress, and little white kid shoes.
Some other time, said the sensible Anika.
They walked on.
Mr. Nilsson certainly can be aggravating, said Pippi. He's always doing things like this. Once in Arabia, he ran away from me and took a position as a maidservant to an elderly widow.
That last was a lie, of course, she added after a pause. Tommy suggested that they should all three go in different directions and hunt. At first, Anika didn't want to because she was a little afraid, but Tommy said, You aren't a fraidy cat, are you? And of course Anika couldn't tolerate such an insult, so off they all went. Tommy went through a field. Mr. Nilsson he did not find, but he did find something else, a bull. Or, to be more exact, the bull found Tommy. And the bull did not like Tommy, for he was a very cross bull, who was not at all fond of children. With his head down, he charged toward Tommy, bellowing fearfully. Tommy let out a terrified shriek that could be heard all through the woods. Pippi and Anika heard it and came running to see what was the matter. By that time, the bull had almost reached Tommy, who had tumbled head over heels over a stump. What a stupid bull, said Pippi to Anika, who was crying uncontrollably. He ought to know he can't act like that. He'll get Tommy's white sailor suit all dirty. I'll have to go and talk some sense into the stupid animal. And off she started. She ran up and pulled the bull by the tail. Forgive me for breaking up the party, she said. And as she had given his tail a good hard pull, the bull turned around and saw a new child to catch on his horns. As I was saying, went on Pippi, forgive me for breaking up, and also forgive me for breaking off. And with that, she broke off one of the bull's horns. It isn't the style to have two horns this year, she said. All the better bulls have just one horn, if any. and she broke off the other horn, too. As bulls have no feeling in their horns, this one didn't know what she had done. He charged at Pippi, and if she had been any other child, there would have been nothing left but a grease spot.
Hey! Hey, stop! Stop tickling me! Shrieked Pippi. You can't imagine how ticklish I am. Hey, stop! Stop, or I'll die laughing!
But the bull didn't stop, and at last Pippi jumped up on his back to get a little rest. To be sure, she didn't get much, because the bull didn't in the least approve of having Pippi on his back. He dodged about madly to get her off, but she clamped her knees and hung on. The bull dashed up and down the field, bellowing so hard that smoke came out of his nostrils. Pippi laughed and shrieked and waved at Tommy and Anika, who stood a little distance away, trembling like aspen leaves. The bull whirled round and round, trying to throw Pippi.
"See me dancing with my little friend!"
cried Pippi, and kept her seat. At last, the bull was so tired that he lay down on the ground and wished he'd never seen such a thing as a child. He had never thought children amounted to much anyway. "Are you going to take a little nap now?" asked Pippi politely. "Then I won't disturb you." She got off his back and went over to Tommy and Anika. Tommy had cried a little. He had a cut on one arm, but Anika had bandaged it with her handkerchief so that it no longer hurt.
"Oh, Pippi!"
cried Anika excitedly.
"Shh, shh," whispered Pippi. "Don't wake the bull. He's sleeping. If we wake him, he'll be fussy."
But the next minute, without paying any attention to the bull in his nap, she was shrieking at the top of her voice,
"Mr. Nilsson! Mr. Nilsson, where are you? We've got to go home!"
And believe it or not, there sat Mr. Nilsson up in a pine tree, sucking his tail and looking so lonesome. It wasn't much fun for a little monkey to be left all alone in the woods. He skipped down from the pine and up on Pippi's shoulder, waving his little straw hat, as he always did when he was very happy.
"Well, well, so you aren't going to be a maidservant this time," said Pippi, stroking his back. "Oh, that was a lie, that's true," she continued.
"But still, if it's true, how can it be a lie?" she argued.
"You wait and see. It's going to turn out that he was a maidservant in Arabia after all. And if that's the case, I know who's going to make the meatballs at our house hereafter."
And then they strolled home, Pippi's dress still going clufs, clufs, and her shoes squish, squish. Tommy and Anika thought they'd had a wonderful day in spite of the bull, and they sang a song they had learned at school. It was really a summer song, but they thought it fitted very well, even if it was now nearly autumn.
In the jolly summertime, through field and wood we make our way. Nobody's sad, everybody's gay. We sing as we go, ho lay, ho lo. You who are young, come join in our song. Don't sit home moping all the day long. Our song will swell through wood and dell and up to the mountain top as well. In the jolly summer time, we sing as we go, ho lay, ho lo.
Pippi sang too, but with slightly different words.
In the jolly summer time, through field and wood I make my way. I do exactly as I wish, and when I walk it goes squish, 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 squish. And my old shoe, it's really true, sometimes says chip and sometimes chew, for the shoe is wet. The bull sleeps yet, and I eat all the rice porridge I can get. In the jolly summer time, I squish wherever I go. Squish, oh, squish, oh.
Chapter 7. Pippi Goes to the Circus.
A circus had come to the little town, and all the children were begging their mothers and fathers for permission to go. Of course, Tommy and Anika asked to go, too, and their kind father immediately gave them some money. Clutching it tightly in their hands, they rushed over to Pippi's. She was on the porch with her horse, braiding his tail into tiny pigtails and tying each one with red ribbon. "I think it's his birthday today," she announced, "so he has to be all dressed up." "Pippi," said Tommy, all out of breath because they had been running so fast, "Pippi, do you want to go with us to the circus?"
"I can go with you most anywhere," answered Pippi. "But whether I can go to the circus or not, I don't know, because I don't know what a circus is. Does it hurt?"
"Silly," said Tommy. "Of course it doesn't hurt. It's fun. Horses and clowns and pretty ladies that walk the tightrope. But it costs money," said Anika, opening her small fist to see if the shiny half dollar and the quarters were still there.
"I'm rich as a troll," said Pippi, "so I guess I can buy a circus all right. But it'll be crowded here if I have more horses. The clowns and the pretty ladies I could keep in the laundry, but it's harder to know what to do with the horses."
"Oh, don't be so silly," said Tommy. "You don't buy a circus. It costs money to go and look at it, see?"
"Preserve us," cried Pippi, and shut her eyes tightly. "It costs money to look? And here I go around goggling all day long. Goodness knows how much money I've goggled up already."
Then, little by little, she opened one eye very carefully, and it rolled round and round in her head.
"Cost what it may," she said, "I must take a look."
At last, Tommy and Anika managed to explain to Pippi what a circus really was, and she took some gold pieces out of her suitcase. Then she put on her hat, which was as big as a millstone, and off they all went. There were crowds of people outside the circus tent and a long line at the ticket window, but at last it was Pippi's turn. She stuck her head through the window and stared at the dear old lady sitting there.
"How much does it cost to look at you?"
Pippi asked. But the old lady was a foreigner who did not understand what Pippi meant and answered in broken Swedish,
"Little girl, it costs a dollar and a quarter in the grandstand and 75 cents on the benches and 25 cents for standing room."
Now Tommy interrupted and said that Pippi wanted a 75-cent ticket. Pippi put down a gold piece, and the old lady looked suspiciously at it. She bit it, too, to see if it was genuine. At last she was convinced that it was really gold, and gave Pippi her ticket and a great deal of change in silver.
"What would I do with all those nasty little white coins?" asked Pippi disgustedly.
"Keep them, and then I can look at you twice in the standing room."
As Pippi absolutely refused to accept any change, the lady changed her ticket to one for the grandstand and gave Tommy and Anika grandstand tickets too, without their having to pay a single penny. In that way, Pippi, Tommy, and Anika came to sit on some beautiful red chairs right next to the ring. Tommy and Anika turned around several times to wave to their schoolmates, who were sitting much farther away.
"This is a remarkable place," said Pippi, looking around in astonishment. "But see, they've spilled sawdust all over the floor. Not that I'm over fussy myself, but that does look careless to me."
Tommy explained that all circuses had sawdust on the floor for the horses to run around in. On a platform nearby, the circus band suddenly began to play a thundering march. Pippi clapped her hands wildly and jumped up and down with delight.
"Does it cost money to hear, too?" she asked. "Or can you do that for nothing?"
At that moment, the curtain in front of the performance entrance was drawn aside, and the ringmaster in a black frock coat, with a whip in his hand, came running in, followed by 10 white horses with red plumes on their heads. The ringmaster cracked his whip, and all the horses galloped around the ring. Then he cracked it again, and all the horses stood still with their front feet up on the railing around the ring. One of them had stopped directly in front of the children. Anika didn't like to have a horse so near her and drew back on her chair as far as she could. But Pippi leaned forward and took the horse's right foot in her hands.
"Hello there," she said. "My horse sent you his best wishes. It's his birthday today, too. But he has bows on his tail instead of on his head."
Luckily, she dropped the foot before the ringmaster cracked his whip again, because then all the horses jumped away from the railing and began to run around the ring. When the number was over, the ringmaster bowed politely, and the horses ran out. In an instant, the curtain opened again for a coal black horse. On its back stood a beautiful lady dressed in green silk tights. The program said her name was Miss Carmencita. The horse trotted around in the sawdust, and Miss Carmencita stood calmly on his back and smiled. But then something happened. Just as the horse passed Pippi's seat, something came swishing through the air, and it was none other than Pippi herself. And there she stood on the horse's back, behind Miss Carmencita. At first, Miss Carmencita was so astonished that she nearly fell off the horse. Then she got mad. She began to strike out with her hands behind her back to make Pippi jump off. But that didn't work. "Take it easy," said Pippi. "Do you think you're the only one who can have any fun? Other people have paid too, haven't they?" Then Miss Carmencita tried to jump off herself, but that didn't work either, because Pippi was holding her tightly around the waist. At that, the audience couldn't help laughing. They thought it was so funny to see the lovely Miss Carmencita held against her will by a little red-headed youngster who stood there on the horse's back in her enormous shoes and looked as if she had never done anything except perform in a circus. But the ringmaster didn't laugh. He turned toward an attendant in a red uniform and made a sign for him to go and stop the horse. "Is this number already over?" asked Pippi in a disappointed tone. "Just when we were having so much fun?"
"Horrible child!" hissed the ringmaster between his teeth. "Get out of here!"
Pippi looked at him sadly. "Why are you mad at me?" she asked. "What's the matter? I thought we were here to have fun." She skipped off the horse and went back to her seat. But now, two huge guards came to throw her out. They took hold of her and tried to lift her up. They couldn't do it. Pippi sat absolutely still, and it was impossible to budge her, although they tried as hard as they could. At last, they shrugged their shoulders and went off. Meanwhile, the next number had begun. It was Miss Elvira, about to walk the tightrope. She wore a pink tulle skirt and carried a pink parasol in her hand. With delicate little steps, she ran out on the rope. She swung her legs gracefully in the air and did all sorts of tricks. It looked so pretty. She even showed how she could walk backward on the narrow rope. But when she got back to the little platform at the end of the rope, there stood Pippi. "What are you going to do now?" asked Pippi, delighted when she saw how astonished Miss Elvira looked. Miss Elvira said nothing at all, but jumped down from the rope and threw her arms around the ringmaster's neck, for he was her father. And the ringmaster once more sent for his guards to throw Pippi out. This time he sent for five of them. But all the people shouted, "Let her stay! We want to see the red-headed girl!" And they stamped their feet and clapped their hands. Pippi ran out on the rope. And Miss Elvira's tricks were as nothing compared with Pippi's. When she got to the middle of the rope, she stretched one leg straight up in the air, and her big shoe spread out like a roof over her head. She bent her foot a little so that she could tickle herself with it back of her ear. The ringmaster was not at all pleased to have Pippi performing in his circus. He wanted to get rid of her, and so he stole up and loosened the mechanism that held the rope taut, thinking surely Pippi would fall down. But Pippi didn't. She set the rope a-swinging instead. Back and forth it swayed, and Pippi swung faster and faster until suddenly she leaped out into the air and landed right on the ringmaster. He was so frightened he began to run. "Oh, what a jolly horse!" cried Pippi. "But why don't you have any pom-poms in your hair?" Now Pippi decided it was time to go back to Tommy and Anika. She jumped off the ringmaster and went back to her seat. The next number was about to begin, but there was a brief pause because the ringmaster had to go out and get a drink of water and comb his hair. Then he came in again, bowed to the audience, and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, in a moment you will be privileged to see the greatest marvel of all time, the strongest man in the world, the mighty Adolf, whom no one has yet been able to conquer.
Here he comes, ladies and gentlemen. Allow me to present to you the mighty Adolf.
And into the ring stepped a man who looked as big as a giant. He wore flesh-colored tights and had a leopard skin draped around his stomach. He bowed to the audience and looked very pleased with himself.
Look at these muscles, said the ringmaster, and squeezed the mighty Adolf's arm where the muscles stood out like balls under the skin. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I have a very special invitation for you. Who will challenge the mighty Adolf in a wrestling match? Who of you dares to try his strength against the world's strongest man? $100 for anyone who can conquer the mighty Adolf. $100, ladies and gentlemen. Think of that. Who will be the first to try?
Nobody came forth. What did he say? Asked Pippi. He says that anybody who can lick that big man will get $100, answered Tommy.
I can, said Pippi, but I think it's too bad to, because he looks nice.
Oh, no, you couldn't, said Anika. He's the strongest man in the world.
Man, yes, said Pippi, but I'm the strongest girl in the world, remember that.
Meanwhile, the mighty Adolf was lifting heavy iron weights and bending thick iron rods in the middle just to show how strong he was.
Oh, come now, ladies and gentlemen, cried the ringmaster. Is there really nobody here who wants to earn $100? Shall I really be forced to keep this myself?
And he waved a bill in the air.
No, that you certainly won't be forced to do, said Pippi, and stepped over the railing into the ring.
The ringmaster was absolutely wild when he saw her.
Get out of here! I don't want to see any more of you, he hissed.
Why do you always have to be so unfriendly? Said Pippi reproachfully. I just want to fight with Mighty Adolf.
This is no place for jokes, said the ringmaster. Get out of here before the Mighty Adolf hears your impudent nonsense.
But Pippi went right by the ringleader and up to Mighty Adolf. She took his hand and shook it heartily.
Shall we fight a little, you and I? She asked.
Mighty Adolf looked at her, but didn't understand a word. In 1 minute I'll begin, said Pippi. And begin she did. She grabbed Mighty Adolf around the waist, and before anyone knew what was happening, she had thrown him on the mat. Mighty Adolf leaped up, his face absolutely scarlet.
Atta girl, Pippi!
Shrieked Tommy and Anika, so loudly that all the people at the circus heard it and began to shriek,
"Atta girl, Pippi!"
too. The ringmaster sat on the railing, wringing his hands. He was mad, but Mighty Adolf was madder. Never in his life had he experienced anything so humiliating as this, and he certainly intended to show that red-headed girl what kind of a man Mighty Adolf really was. He rushed at Pippi and caught her round the waist. But Pippi stood firm as a rock.
You can do better than that, she said to encourage him.
Then she wriggled out of his grasp, and in the twinkling of an eye, Mighty Adolf was on the mat again. Pippi stood beside him, waiting. She didn't have to wait long. With a roar, he was up again, rushing at her.
Tiddly palm and piddly day, said Pippi.
All the people in the tent stamped their feet and threw their hats in the air and shouted, "Hurrah, Pippi!"
When Mighty Adolf came rushing at her for the third time, Pippi lifted him high in the air and with her arms straight above her, carried him clear around the ring. Then she laid him down on the mat again and held him there.
"Now, little fellow," said she, I don't think we'll bother about this any more. We'll never have any more fun than we've had already.
Pippi is the winner! Pippi is the winner!
Cried all the people.
Mighty Adolf stole out as fast as he could, and the ringmaster had to go up and hand Pippi the $100, although he looked as if he'd much prefer to eat her.
Here you are, young lady. Here you are, said he. $100.
That thing, said Pippi scornfully.
What would I want with that old piece of paper?
Take it and use it to fry herring on if you want to. And she went back to her seat. This is certainly a long circus, she said to Tommy and Anika. I think I'll take a little snooze, but wake me if they need my help about anything else. And then she lay back in her chair and went to sleep at once. There she lay and snored while the clowns, the sword swallowers, and the snake charmers did their tricks for Tommy and Anika and all the rest of the people at the circus. Just the same, I think Pippi was best of all, whispered Tommy to Anika. Chapter 8 Pippi entertains two burglars. After Pippi's performance at the circus, there was not a single person in all the little town who did not know how strong she was. There was even a piece about her in the paper. But people who lived in other places, of course, didn't know who Pippi was. One dark autumn evening, two tramps came walking down the road past Villa Villacoola. They were two bad thieves, wandering about the country to see what they could steal. They saw that there was a light in the windows of Villa Villacoola and decided to go in and ask for a sandwich. That evening, Pippi had poured out all her gold pieces on the kitchen floor and sat there counting them. To be sure, she couldn't count very well, but she did it now and then anyway just to keep everything in order. 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 60, 10, 60, 11, 60, 12, 60, 13, 60, 16... Phew, it makes my throat feel like 60. Goodness, there must be some more numbers in the arithmetic. Oh, yes, now I remember. 104, 1,000. That certainly is a lot of money, said Pippi. There was a loud knock on the door. Walk in or stay out, whichever you choose, shouted Pippi. I never force anyone against his will. The door opened and the two tramps came in. You can imagine that they opened their eyes when they saw a little red-haired girl sitting all alone on the floor, counting money.
Are you all alone at home? They asked craftily.
Of course not, said Pippi. Mr. Nilsson is at home, too. The thieves couldn't very well know that Mr. Nilsson was a monkey sleeping in a little green bed with a doll's quilt around his stomach. They thought the man of the house must be named Mr. Nilsson. And they winked at each other.
We can come back a little later, is what they meant. But to Pippi they said, We just came in to ask what your clock is.
They were so excited that they had forgotten all about the sandwich. Great strong men who don't know what a clock is, said Pippi. Where in the world were you brought up? The clock is a little round thingamajig that says tick-tack, tick-tack, and that goes and goes but never gets to the door. Do you know any more riddles? Out with them if you do, said Pippi encouragingly. The tramps thought Pippi was too little to tell time, so without another word they went out again.
I don't demand that you say tack,
thanks in Swedish, shouted Pippi after them. But you could at least make an effort and say tick. You haven't even as much sense as a clock has. But by all means, go in peace. And Pippi went back to her counting. No sooner were the tramps outside than they began to rub their hands with delight.
Did you see all that money? Heavenly day, said one of them.
Yes, once in a while luck is with us, said the other. All we need to do is wait until the kid and that Nilsson are asleep. Then we'll sneak in and bag the lot.
They sat down under an oak tree in the garden to wait. A drizzling rain was falling. They were very hungry, so they were quite uncomfortable, but the thought of all that money kept their spirits up. From time to time, lights went out in other houses, but in Villa Villacoola they shone on. It so happened that Pippi was learning to dance the schottische, and she didn't want to go to bed until she was sure she could do it. At last, however, the lights went out in the windows of Villa Villacoola, too. The tramps waited quite a while, until they were sure Mr. Nilsson must have gone to sleep. At last, they crept quietly up to the kitchen door and prepared to open it with their burglar tools. Meanwhile, one of them, his name, as a matter of fact, was Bloom, just happened to feel of the doorknob.
The door was not locked. "Well, some people are smart," he whispered to his companion. "The door is open."
"So much the better for us," answered his companion, a black-haired man called Thunder Carlson by those who knew him. Thunder Carlson lighted his pocket torch, and they crept into the kitchen. There was no one there. In the next room was Pippi's bed, and there also stood Mr. Nilsson's little doll bed. Thunder Carlson opened the door and looked around carefully. Everything was quiet as he played his torch around the room. When the light touched Pippi's bed, the two tramps were amazed to see nothing but a pair of feet on the pillow. Pippi, as usual, had her head under the covers at the foot of the bed.
"That must be the girl," whispered Thunder Carlson to Bloom. "And no doubt she sleeps soundly. But where in the world is Nilsson, do you suppose?"
"Mr. Nilsson, if you please," came Pippi's calm voice from under the covers. "Mr. Nilsson is in the little green doll bed." The tramps were so startled that they almost rushed out at once. But then it suddenly dawned on them what Pippi had said, that Mr. Nilsson was lying in a doll's bed. And now, in the light of the torch, they could see the little bed and the tiny monkey lying in it. Thunder Carlson couldn't help laughing.
"Ha, ha, ha, ha! Bloom," he said. "Mr. Nilsson is a monkey. Ha, ha, ha! Can you beat that?"
"Well, what did you think he was?" came Pippi's calm voice from under the covers again. "A lawnmower?"
"Aren't your mother and father at home?" asked Bloom.
"No," said Pippi. "They're gone. Completely gone."
Thunder Carlson and Bloom chuckled with delight.
"Listen, little girl," said Thunder Carlson. "Come out so we can talk to you."
"No, I'm sleeping," said Pippi. "Is it more riddles you want? If so, answer this one. What is it that goes and goes and never gets to the door?"
Now Bloom went over and pulled the covers off Pippi.
"Can you dance the schottische?" asked Pippi, looking him gravely in the eye. "I can."
"You ask too many questions," said Thunder Carlson. "Can't we ask a few, too? Where, for instance, is the money you had on the floor a little while ago?"
"In the suitcase on top of the wardrobe," answered Pippi truthfully.
Thunder Carlson and Bloom grinned.
I hope you don't have anything against our taking it, little friend," said Thunder Carlson.
"Certainly not," said Pippi. "Of course I don't."
Whereupon Bloom lifted down the suitcase.
"I hope you don't have anything against my taking it back, little friend," said Pippi, getting out of bed and stepping over to Bloom. Bloom had no idea how it all happened, but suddenly the suitcase was in Pippi's hand.
"Here, quit your fooling," said Thunder Carlson angrily. "Hand over the suitcase."
He took Pippi firmly by the hand and tried to snatch back the booty.
"Fooling, fooling, too much fooling," said Pippi, and lifted Thunder Carlson up on the wardrobe. A moment later she had Bloom up there, too.
Then the tramps were frightened. They began to see that Pippi was no ordinary girl. However, the suitcase tempted them so much they forgot their fright.
"Come on now, both together,"
yelled Thunder Carlson, and they jumped down from the wardrobe and threw themselves on Pippi, who had the suitcase in her hand. Pippi gave each one a little poke with her finger, and they shrank away into a corner. Before they had a chance to get up again, Pippi had fetched a rope and, quick as a flash, had bound the arms and legs of both burglars. Now they sang a different tune.
"Please, please, miss," begged Thunder Carlson, "forgive us. We were only joking. Don't hurt us. We're just two tramps who came in to ask for food."
Bloom even began to cry a bit. Pippi put the suitcase neatly back on the wardrobe. Then she turned to her prisoners.
"Can either of you dance the schottische?"
Why, yes, said Thunder Carlson. "I guess we both can."
"Oh, what fun," cried Pippi, clapping her hands. "Can't we dance a little? I've just learned, you know."
Well, certainly, by all means, said Thunder Carlson, a bit confused.
Pippi took some large scissors and cut the ropes that bound her guests.
"But we don't have any music," she said in a worried voice.
Then she had an idea.
"Can't you blow on a comb?" she said to Bloom. "And I'll dance with him,"
She pointed to Thunder Carlson. Oh, yes, Bloom could blow on a comb all right. And blow he did, so that you could hear it all through the house. Mr. Nilsson sat up in bed, wide awake, just in time to see Pippi whirling around with Thunder Carlson. She was dead serious, and danced as if her life depended on it. At last, Bloom said he couldn't blow on the comb any longer because it tickled his mouth unmercifully. And Thunder Carlson, who had tramped the roads all day, began to feel tired. "Oh, please, just a little longer," begged Pippi, dancing on, and Bloom and Thunder Carlson could do nothing but continue. At 3 in the morning, Pippi said, "I could keep on dancing until Thursday, but maybe you're tired and hungry." That was exactly what they were, though they hardly dared to say so. Pippi went to the pantry and took out bread and cheese and butter, ham and cold roast and milk, and they sat around the kitchen table, Bloom and Thunder Carlson and Pippi, and ate until they were almost four-cornered. Pippi poured a little milk into her ear. "That's good for earache," she said.
"Poor thing. Have you got an earache?" asked Bloom.
"No," said Pippi, "but I might get one." Finally, the two tramps got up, thanked Pippi for the food, and begged to be allowed to say goodbye. "It was awfully jolly that you came. Do you really have to go so soon?" said Pippi regretfully. "Never have I seen anyone who can dance the schottische the way you do, my sugar pig," she said to Thunder Carlson. And to Bloom, "If you keep on practicing on the comb, you won't notice the tickling." As they were going out of the door, Pippi came running after them and gave them each a gold piece. "These you have honestly earned," she said.